Here. Good evening, everyone. This is the Committee of Safety call, Thursday, October 27, 2016. Okay, and we're here to discuss and brain trust ideas and strategies for forming committees of safeties in our communities as a step in the resistance and to establish our common law grand juries out of all that. Same move that our forefathers made, who were all part of committees of safeties, at least all the signers of the Declaration of Independence. So if anybody has anything to add, and the other thing is tonight there is excitement because the verdict came through in Oregon that they were not guilty on all charges in the Malheur wildlife standoff. Which pretty much ends that, should end it. You know, we don't know what shenanigans they're going to pull, but it looks like this would at least be the beginning of the end. They have to release those seven people. And of course, there are still pending charges in Nevada, and we'll see how that goes, because to tell you the truth, they got less evidence in Nevada. They had less of a case in Nevada than they had in Oregon, because in Nevada they went on, the BLM went on the land after them. In Oregon, you know, they took over the wildlife refuge, which it turns out that, you know, that's the people's land. The BLM doesn't own it, and there's all kinds of other things in there, you know, that are extenuating circumstances that didn't hold up to the scrutiny. So in Nevada, I don't know what they're going to rest their case in, because I think the Nevada case, they've already proved that land was not given to the BLM, that it was given to the people. And the BLM just had a contract to manage it, and it's actually open to what do they call it, where the people could come in and take it over, hostile takeover, whatever, forceful takeover, because it actually is their property. And it's written into the law like that. Imagine that. So I don't know. Does anybody have anything going on that we should know about as far as committees of safety or, forming them and what's going on in your counties with your sheriffs? Any progress there? And anybody who's formed new committees of safety should speak up now so we can tally that. Feel free to, I don't have it on cue, so all you got to do is hit *6 and unmute yourself if you want to talk. I just muted everybody because there was an awful lot of background noise coming. So.
Yeah, Gerard, I wondered if you'd, this is Jan in Kansas, and I wondered if you had heard anything about Deutsche Bank about to collapse. I heard that on the radio today, that they're having a big meeting tonight, whoever they is, I guess the IMF and all of them, but Deutsche Bank is about ready to fall, they said.
Yeah, I read it a month ago that they thought that would be one of the first ones to go, and there's another one here in America. Either one of them can take the whole system down with panic. You know, when you have these what they call cascading cross defaults, and even the IMF doesn't have the ability to stop it once it starts. You know,
that's kind of what they were saying, that the central banks, when Deutsche Bank goes down, they were, whoever it was, I can't remember, might have been Alex Jones, or no, it wasn't Alex, I don't know who it was, but whoever it was said that the central banks, unless they could come up with something tonight, you know, pull another rabbit out of the hat tonight, mm-hmm. that the central banks, it was too far gone for the central banks to even do anything.
Yeah, and that's not a good thing. Look, if they could have done something years ago, months ago, and even weeks ago, and they haven't. And I believe that they want it to crash. Look, if they're losing control of the election, the jury out there just found the government the people not guilty. They got a 95% conviction rate, the federal government. So their world is collapsing. They only know, they know two things, war, or financial collapse, unrest, and martial law. That's what they're looking for,
Okay.
And we should not let that happen. The thing is I don't know how far they're going to get with I don't know that they have everybody in the world, all these other countries signed on to this. We'll see. We'll see how deep their influence goes. I think that, the European people are fed up. They have had more of a distrust for their government than the Americans have for a longer time because they're an older community and they understand history, unlike the Americans who many people can't believe that their government would do such things to them, and they're standing there kind of shell-shocked like deer in the headlights.
Yeah.
So, and, the next thing that happens after that, first you have shock, but the next emotion is anger, and that's what they want. They want the anger to come up, and they don't understand why people haven't gone in the streets yet. Of course, they will go in the streets if they can't buy food, if the food goes off the shelves and things like that, You see, I don't think they really want the economy to collapse, because if the economy collapses, all those that are in office now are going to be blamed. They won't be able to go outside. They're going to have to run and hide because they're going to be stringing them up from telephone poles. So I really don't think that the American central bankers and all the people over here like Geithner and all them, I don't think they want it to collapse. I think they fear the loss of that control. It's the IMF and those guys up there that are like, hey, you got into it, now get out of it. Look, if they encouraged them to dump all this helicopter money with Greenspan, they knew what was going to happen. It's inevitable. It's inevitable. If you got fire, you got a can of gasoline, you keep dumping the gasoline, it's going to go on fire, And they understood that. And what happened is, when they got into trouble and they couldn't get out and they asked the IMF to bail them out, the IMF at one point said, you got yourself into the problem, now you get it out. Because what they did was they let the central bankers get drunk on printing money, believing that they were going to get bailed out no matter what happened. They got everybody believing that they have such control that a failure could never happen again, like the stock market crash. But that's not true. It's not true. Because they've been experimenting with it scientifically for years. Every financial downturn they did as a scientific experiment, they're controlling it, I believe. I believe they had perfect control over it. Now, the only thing they don't have control over is there's a point where it's like rolling a boulder down the hill. Once you let it go, it's going to go down that hill, and if it bounces in the wrong direction, it's going to go where it wants to go. So there's a certain amount of momentum that they can't control, but they're pretty good, at controlling things. I mean, look at it. If you dug a ditch down the hill before you rolled the boulder, you could make it like a pinball machine, and you would know 98% of the time it's going to go down the ditch, So the question is did they dig a ditch down the hill, and are they going to hit their target, or is the thing going to bounce, is going to go this way or that way, and they're going to have no control over it? Nobody knows. I don't know. Nobody knows, I don't think. And I don't even think they know. I mean, look, the best mate plans of mice and men. And one of the things is we get arrogant and they think they know what's going to happen. And, every time, they said that the Titanic couldn't sink, and even God couldn't sink her. That was the wrong thing to say, as she was leaving port, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's happened time and time again. So, if you get to that point, you're just asking for trouble, and I think that's where they are. Look at the federal, the FDIC is fractionalized just like the rest of the thing. Oh, you're insured up to $100,000. That's nice, as long as we don't have more than two banks fail in one day, you are. Because they only have 1/100th of the money that's necessary, because they've convinced themselves that all the banks would never fail on the same time. And that's exactly what's going to happen if they let this money collapse.
I was just going to say, they were talking about whoever it was. I wish I could remember. But they were talking about it would be called a bank holiday, where all the banks would close. I'm in Kansas City, and we've had our banks here where they were shut down for a day, and the women, you know, that worked in there would just be wandering around wondering why the bank had shut down. That's happened at three different banks that I know of.
Well,
in the last month or 6 weeks. Excuse me, go ahead.
Right. Those are practice runs, basically. And those are smaller banks that they can control. You know, and everything they do, they're testing all the time.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean they're in complete control, though. You know, you can test dynamite all day long, and one day you get a short fuse, and you didn't get away, did you? So anyway, I don't want to get too much into that. I mean, it's pretty exciting that the jury found all those guys innocent on every count. And the courtroom was as much as they tried to hold the jury from seeing everything and all the evidence that they wouldn't let them keep. And then thank God that Ammon and Ryan were man enough to stand up there and present the evidence anyway, even though the judge was trying to stop them, you know, and they did a very good job. They conducted themselves very professionally. And the jury saw through it. As much as they're a managed jury, look at even juror 11, they had to get rid of him.
Yeah.
He was a BLM employee, and I didn't think, you know, the judge said, oh, you think that this is gonna, you know, did an investigation in 5 minutes and banged their gavel and said investigation's over, and put him back in. But then the lawyers went after it, her, and I guess she realized at that point that they better change it to an alternate, which they did do. So, you know, the fact that they got rid of juror number 11 because somebody higher up probably said, don't you dare leave him in there because that's an indictment of the whole system. If they would have left that juror in there and it ended up being a hung jury, the people would never accept that, you know. So, I don't know. It's just they did change him and they did bring an alternate in. And the fact that they had the unanimous decision, so it wasn't a hung jury, I'm flabbergasted because that means they didn't have control over the jury like I would have thought they would have had, you know. So it's very interesting, and it's very hopeful that we can actually, even in their broken system, with the horrible instructions they give these juries, and how they psychoanalyze them and test them before they bring them in, that they could come up with a not guilty verdict because these guys went over the top with their courtroom antics and probably the jury was ready to throw up before they went into deliberating. That's how bad it was. So, and you know, that's, again, I'm going to plug the Committee of Safety because that's what this meeting is supposed to be doing. You know, and if you get your Committees of Safety going in your counties, you can control that process of the grand jury. It's the beginning of controlling it. You know, you're supposed to be able to demand the jury of your peers. And, you know, when you got a prosecutor picking the jury, you can argue that he didn't pick jurors of your peers. You know, the fact that they're going to give Sharia law in this country is good for us because we could demand Christian law. If they can demand Sharia law. Now, look, make no mistake about it. Just because they have their own courts, you know, under their religion, and so do other people that accept that particular system, they still can't do anything that is abhorrent to our system of law when it comes down to fundamental rights. So in other words, if they want to take somebody out and stone them in the street, that's not going to fly in America. That violates a fundamental right, and even if they're amongst themselves, they want to sanction somebody and the people agree to it, that's their business. But we're certainly not going to let them mutilate a child or stone a woman for infidelity or anything like that because they're in America. And in America, that's the line that you don't cross. But the fact that they're talking about giving them Sharia courts is good for us because we can demand the same thing. We can say, look, we come from a constitution that's under God. We used to have the Ten Commandments over the chamber of the Supreme Court. So that's the court I want, and that's the jury I want. I want a jury of my peers. They can't deny you that. So we're living in really exciting times to make a difference if we do it. If we step up to the plate and we do it, we'll have success, but we have to do it now. This is the window. If we don't do it now, it's not going to happen. You know, I mean, I'm afraid that if this economy collapses, we won't get a chance to, because we'll all be busy living hand to mouth. We should all be ready. We should all have things to trade and food saved up to feed our neighbors, and that's where your committees of safety will look at your community and see what the resources are, and you would make sure that your community resources took care of your community first. Committees of safety can do action things, because you're meeting at a meeting with no officials, and you can make plans, and you can talk in a way that you could never talk at a town hall meeting. And then you know what you could do? You could show up at the town hall as concerned citizens, and you could say, we want you to vote on this resolution we drew up. And you read the resolution. And one of the resolutions is that we don't care what kind of presidential order there is, all of our county's resources will feed this county first, and whatever is left over, we will send out at our discretion. That we have sovereignty. We are above the federal government. The people rule here. And it's true, we do. Every town has what they call home rule law. That means when they make a law in a town, it has the same force as if the legislators made it. And you need to know that. You need to learn that, because we're a representative government. So when the people speak, then the people have spoken. That's above everybody. When a local court has a not guilty verdict, even the Supreme Court can't overturn that. Nobody can. That's the highest court in the land, because it's the grand jury. It's the people. And that's what the Committee of Safety is all about, empowering the people. You got to empower the people. How do you empower the people? Well, the first thing you guys got to do is you got to go out there and empower your sheriff. I don't care what kind of a socialist communist he is. Let me tell you what. When you read him our stuff on the sheriff and the power of the sheriff, that should make him happy, because when he realizes he's the top dog in the county, think about it. He's above the federal government. You know, what guy, what sheriff wouldn't want that? I mean, first of all, he's in law enforcement. He has that law enforcement head. He likes to be an authority. He likes to be in control. So you come in and they say, oh, you're this and that. No. If the sheriff is above the state police. As far as I'm concerned, the state police are a corporate body that are a private police force of the governor, and that's all they are. And when they try to take the pistol permits out of the sheriff's hand and give it to the state police, that is an act of war. That is tyranny. They are not allowed to do that. They shouldn't. I mean, not. I don't even think we should need pistol permits in the first place. But, I mean, I was never politically correct, so don't listen to me. But the fact of the matter is how can you give it to a police force that really isn't under an oath to the Constitution, you know, for the United States of America? So that's the fact. They're nothing more than code enforcement officers in a private community, practically. They're an administrative police force. And they have administrative courts. And the quicker we learn that and start operating outside of them, the quicker this country will come back. Look at, we shouldn't even be going into those courts to sue anybody for anything. We should be working our own courts out. We should be working our civil things out amongst each other. And there's a passage in the Bible that says, why do you go into their courts looking for justice? Now, what they were talking about was when two people have a beef between two people. When you get sucked into a state court because they're charging you with something, you have no choice. They brought you in there. You're not going in their courts looking for justice. You're trying to get justice after you've been dragged into their courts against your will. So that's the difference. You know, and think about it. Your Committee of Safety also feeds into your court watcher group. It all ties together. It's all a symbiotic relationship that we've lost in this country. We sit in front of the TV with that blue glow, and we don't say hi to our neighbors. We don't talk anymore. We don't have any communications. And what do? We watch what? programming. Why do you think they call it programming? Because it's exactly what it is. They're programming you. I know a person, you know, I grew up, I homeschooled my kids, and we had people that were in our church that came over and drove here to the school that we set up, you know, over here, and the mothers all were here because the state says that if you're going to homeschool, the parents have to be there. So all the mothers came with their kids, and we bought a trailer, and we homeschooled them in the trailer. But, you know, early on, we knew that television was a problem, you know, that the schools were a problem. They're programming our children with outcome-based education. And most of the time, against the morals that we're trying to feed them, they're giving them the opposite morals. But the funny story is we had voluntarily shut the TV off in our homes unless something really good was on. So we were very careful about what we put on the television. And this one mother, and she had like five kids that she adopted, and some of them from Haiti, and that she was amazing. And she said, oh, there was this series she wanted to see. I don't remember what it was, you know, a series, something like Shogun that ran, you know, weekly. And so she was watching that. But, of course, you know, when you watch those things, what comes? They got the commercials, right? So they're programming you either way, right? And she says, I don't know. She says, I'm convinced. She said, every time I go in and watch a series like that, she says, the next day I got a hankering to buy an SUV. So... they're like, they got these truck commercials, and she wanted a new truck, you know. She's like, I'm telling you, I'm pretty good until I watch those commercials, you know. And it's true. It's true, because a lot of programming is done subliminally. It's subconsciously. And it's a wonder that we could even sit here and have this conversation tonight after all we've been through. They've been feeding us fluoride for years. The dentists have been using it. They stick it in our toothpaste. And if you live in a city, they stick it in your water. And it's something that makes people docile. We know that for a fact, amongst all the other health problems it causes, the dangers. Fluoride, because you it's a chemical frontal lobotomy. So... of course you don't feel like getting up and going to the town board meeting complaining about anything because you had your daily dose of fluoride in your toothpaste. You know, if you leave your toothpaste out and a child gets a hold of it and eats it, they'll get fluoride poisoning. They'll die. That's how much fluoride's in toothpaste. They eat a half a tube of toothpaste and they're under 2 years old. You got to take them to the hospital. So, you know, so between that, and the television and the crazy crooked politicians that have been downloading all their disgusting lies all these years. How do we even come out of that? You know, maybe the fluoride actually helped us because it made us so numb that their programming didn't go in all the way. I don't know. See, that's how things work. God leads the devil around like a bull by the nose with a ring. He thinks he's winning, and meanwhile, you give a little tug and that 2,000-pound bull, he's got a ring in his nose, and the little kid pulls on the chain, and the whole body turns. Imagine that. So I should shut up. Anybody else have anything? We have some other people in here.
I have something, and it goes along with what you're saying. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, loud and clear. Go ahead.
Okie dokie. All right, this is Veronica. And I just want to let people know that on the Committee of Safety site, I posted in the comments section, what you were talking about is basically systematic changes to what we do, how we do it, with programming and so on and so forth. And what I did was I put together some PowerPoint presentations, and the PowerPoints aren't exactly professional, however, it does have good content. And the content can be separated out of each of the PowerPoints and used for your local assemblies. And what I entitled it was Systemic Tips for Changing a Populated System. And systemic is different, of course, than systematic. What the politicians have done has been systematically, and going back, of course, to the first paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, we were to dissolve the political bands which connected us with another, systematically, of course, and to assume amongst the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which we're entitled. And that's what you were talking about when you were talking about, it seemed like, when you were talking about not going into court with our brothers, but going one-on-one with them. So
exactly.
In this systemic tips for changing a populated system, I put in here, and I'll read it right off of here, to change a populated system, and this isn't coming from me per se, although what I did is I put together the PowerPoint presentations in order to clarify what the psychosocial dynamics are and how to overcome them. So I go into the understand and acknowledge that people within a system may be rigidly attached to subsystems that are different that has a different function than the larger system. And of course, you were talking about Sharia law, and that is a good thing, as you say. Everything you said is absolutely very, very good and in line with this. So going into the colonial background, just to be aware that there were people within the committees of safety back before the Declaration of Independence was signed, that were already entrenched in the colonies. They didn't care which way it went as long as they could continue their business as usual. And feudalism is a family affair, you know, going way back. They give a plot of land just like they did with Penn here in Pennsylvania, but they expected tribute throughout. And that was a treaty or a contract that was entered into before the Constitution, of course, was drafted. And it says right in there, Article 6, it says, you know, you can, whatever was is going to be the law of the land. We're going to, you know, protect it because it's contract law. So what I have in here is some colonial background, and then going back into scripture from the days of Pentecost and how many people would be on the earth today of those who actually saw the dynamics, the descendants of those that saw the dynamics, and the population today, they would have surpassed the population today, just those 3,000 people. They would have surpassed the population in the 16th generation. So what happened to them? So when scripture talks about a remnant, indeed, there is a remnant, because that was only, you know, a couple of tribes of the Israelite nation, if you wanted to get into that aspect. But it's interesting that we have forgotten who we are in the scheme of things. And if there is a God and this is his work, then, you know, all we have to do is stand up and assume amongst the powers of the earth that separate and equal station to which we're entitled. So the second thing in here is strengthening its people's ownership of their own natural resources, both seen and unseen. And what I have in this block is skills building for mediators. And in there, I have how to go about doing a mediation. And anybody can do a mediation if they are so inclined that they are able to not get into somebody's positions, but search for their common interest. And then ask the right questions. And I have a couple of different sections on asking questions that can come right out of the PowerPoints and just be something that you guys want to put together just for your assemblies on asking questions correctly. Then the next one is developing practical rituals and rites of passage that encourage interdependence and interconnectedness within each of the systems and subsystems and within the larger system. And I quote a poem in there, and the poem was great because it was about putting an ambulance down in a valley rather than a fence on the hill, and all the money that was made by, you know, doing that and taking the fun away from kids that run up and down the hill. So anyway, and this is about maintenance, champerty, and schmooze. You know, oh, we're going to fix things for you. You know, just pay us a little, you know, tax you a little bit extra. So I kind of go into that aspect with that one. Then triangulating from the inorganic fictional entities that limit and sometimes prohibit the type of self-sufficiency, which is what the committees of safeties are all about, that secures to yourself and your posterity the blessings of liberty. And I go into jurist orientation, and I go into the American Bar Association on probate law had an article in there that was written by a psychologist on undue influence and how people who are in a bad place and grieving and so on and so forth can be manipulated. And I put in some strategies and some things to look for when people are in a process of grief in that particular presentation. And then identifying exceptions and handling them with wisdom and compassion. And I go into conflict resolution, strategies for transition, because what you were saying, you go one-on-one, you negotiate with your brother or your neighbor or whoever, and if that doesn't work out, then, you know, or if it works out to a point, then you go ahead and you take it before a mediator to kind of help you to find out your common interests, because you may have your position, but you want to look on the common interest. Then recognize that maturation is a process wherein and whereby innate skills are developed and perfected. And I go into 12 steps programs, and you know, we're addicted. We are addicted to this feudalistic corporate system. We want to be taken care of, and not we. I mean, obviously I don't, or else I'd be a little bit different than I am right now. But the thing is that, you know, the 12 steps to spiritual maturity, I mean, that's right there in scripture. And I go into the scriptures that the 12 steps come out of. And I worked in addiction programs, so I recognize, you know, the dependency and the codependency as far as government goes and the programs and, you know, the champerty and maintenance and schmooze. I mean, it all goes together, and the bear tree causing the conflict so that you run. Anyway, I'm going on. I'm sorry. And in there, wait, let me finish.
I just want to put a comment to what you just said before I lose it. I might be tempted to let them take care of me if I really believe that they would. I don't believe that they're going to. So that's why I resist. Look, I get old. I don't want to have to keep working. They promised me all this stuff. Guess what? I'm not going to get it, and I don't believe I'm ever going to get it. So that's a problem when the government promises you something. Go ahead.
But what I found out, you know, to just kind of throw up my hands and say, oh, wait a minute, no, hey, this is contract law. I mean, this has been, it was the Social Security Administration is what I found out because of an older lady at the time. She was in her 70s, and I was like in my 40s, and she was saying, they told me that I have to be on welfare. They won't give me my Social Security. Security, and I worked 23 quarters. Well, at the time she took out so anyway, I was trying to, you know, work things out with her. So we went to the Social Security Administration's office. This is in Nevada. And I tried to explain to the man that, you know, she's saying that she worked 23 quarters and that was a contract that she signed up for. You know, she worked more than the hours. And she did. There was only like, I think it was 6 or 9 hours at the time, or 9 quarters, I'm sorry, that one had. It was 6 quarters at the time that one had to work, because what I wound up doing is asking him, because he was saying, no, you have to have 40 quarters. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, let me see the law. I told him, she was getting excited. I said, let me see the law and give me an account of the law from the time that Social Security Administration started back in 1936, and I will explain that to her, okay? And this was like in the 90s. Mid-90s. So he gave it to me, and as it's coming off the printer, he's looking at it, and his face is kind of drooping, and he staples it together, and I asked him for his name. I put his name on there and everything, and he handed it to me without any comment, and I just looked at him. When I got outside and I started looking at it, I saw what the problem was. We only have to work 40 quarters. That's 10 years, okay? Then the Social Security is supposed to stop being taken out of our checks right then and there, because we have done our indenture to the Social Security Administration.
Oh, I can't believe you're saying this, because my next comment was, look at, I don't mind being an indentured servant, but I paid. I'm done. This business.
Exactly. Now, and that's exactly.
I don't even want to pay land tax. You can't tax my land because I paid my taxes. I can't own land. I am not free. right?
Well,
think that our government would set up, that our forefathers would set up a system where the government controls the money and controls the taxes on the land, and if you don't pay the land taxes, they can take your property away, and yet they control the amount of the taxes and the amount of your income by placing the value on the money thereof. That you talk about a Ponzi game, a con game. What could be more of a con than that?
Well, they are things along that nature, not necessarily in the words you're saying, but things along that nature, the supporting evidence is in these PowerPoints. So please feel free to pick and choose what you want. Everything is right there on the COS, National Liberty Alliance site. It's stuff I've been collecting over the years and, putting it together piece by piece.
Look,
and,
I'm going to use that in my court case. You just
well,
made
take a look, and you don't have to listen. I mean, each one of them has me talking, and showing the entire presentation, and some they're all about an hour. Some are just a little bit longer than an hour. However,
do you talk about the Social Security system that you just said? Which one?
I don't
do you
talk
have
about the Social Security. I wasn't even thinking about the Social Security Administration until just now when we were just the way the mindset went. But that's just one of the things, okay? But
right.
I do have supporting information, and what I will do is I will add it to the wall because each of the PowerPoints used in the presentations can be accessed at the bottom right of the page at freeconferencecall.com/wall/ECHAD, ECHAD. And if you don't know what ECHAD is, that means one in Hebrew. And modified for local use. But,
that's the stuff that I need. Because, I'm trying to drive the point home in these courts to these judges and these people, if you think that this is the way it is, you got to be crazy. It doesn't make any sense that we should live like this. It's common law, common sense, right? And I also know that there was a premise our forefathers had that in America, you would not have to pay any taxes if you didn't want to. All you had to do was refrain from the taxable activity. Well, what taxable activity am I performing living in my house? None, except the fact that they're calling me a resident, and that's a commercial term and whatever other kind of word magic they think they're playing. But, if you can't own your property, you can't have freedom. Your first piece of property is your body. But how are you going to exercise that freedom if you have to ask permission to do this or do that? Our basic right is property rights. That's our first and most basic right, and that's what they've ruined. And I don't care what they think they need land taxes for. It's a lie. I don't care if they think they need it to support the roads or the fire system or anything. There's other ways of doing that. And look, I can volunteer to pay a road tax to have the road in front of my house fixed. But you can't extract stuff from me and services that I don't get. And then if I don't pay it, take my land away? Because then I'm not free anymore, am I?
Yeah, but who says that they own the mineral rights? Of course, it's the government, right? Or somebody who says, well, the mineral rights belong to, so-and-so. And if we are what we eat, in their mind, we're real estate. Real estate here in Pennsylvania is defined as interest in land, whether corporeal or in real estate, I think it says, or land, whether corporeal or incorporeal, whether in this commonwealth or outside of this commonwealth, whether freehold or non-freehold. And I go into a couple of things like that, but I don't give the definition of real estate in any of these, but it'll tie together for anybody who, wants to peruse the site as far as the PowerPoints go and just draw out what they want from them. But
hello.
Go ahead.
Could I say something here?
Who's that?
This is John in Alaska.
Yes, John. Go ahead.
A number of times people have mentioned having police stop them and so forth, and the solution to that would be, according to what I've heard, is don't sign anything, don't deal with them, otherwise you're contracting with them, and it's a commerce sort of situation. Well, if that is the case, and I think it probably is, then there must be a similar situation with regard to the de facto corporation government on a local level. So it seems to me that they have a presumption going. I haven't determined what it is, but I think we all should. And the presumption is that we have contracted with them in some manner. And it might be from the standpoint of accepting the status of resident, because that term resident implies that you're not permanently living here, that you are a resident in your living area, but you are a citizen of the United States, which means a subject to the federal corporation. I don't know whether that's the presumption they're operating under or not. But
absolutely. Look, you're invicto when you go in there. You're invicto, and they allow the judge to hold you under that presumption because it solves the problem of in persona jurisdiction. So unless you rebut the presumption, then all you are is a soulless vessel, and they're towing you in because you're not operating the way you should, and they're going to make you, they've found you at sea, and they've towed you in, if you want to use admiralty terms. So, yes, and I mean, they don't understand this themselves. They're just trained to do things in a certain way. Some of them know. I am convinced that the judges on the higher level and the judges that have been in here long enough, they know. Now, I know somebody that went through the State Trooper Academy, and they told him, to walk up to the car, you are contracting with the people. Now, why would they be teaching their young troopers that particular line? Why? I mean, so it's getting to the point that the people are waking up and they don't want to contract with them. It's gotten to the so bad that they got to warn the troopers to make a contract somehow. Now, I've never signed a ticket in my life in New York State, but some states make you sign them. I've never had to. They just give them to you, and if you don't show up, then they make a warrant, and they come get you forcibly. They don't care whether you sign it or not. If I lived in a state where they wanted me to sign it, I would say, I really don't want a contract with you, and unless you're holding me under pain of suffering or you're going to arrest me, and I would tape it. That's why you carry a dash cam or a smartphone, everybody has them, and you tape it, and you refuse to sign it two or three times, and you say, well, since you're threatening me with bodily harm, I'll sign it. That's your evidence that there is no contract because you were under duress. They can't force you to do anything that you don't want to and then call it a contract. You know what a contract is? A contract means that there's equal things for both sides. So if they're forcing you to do something, it's no longer equal. The nature of a contract is it's an agreement. You know, they hand you a piece of paper and they say, sign this. You go through it. You should be able to cross out lines and put your own lines in. And then when you sign it and they accept it, that's a contract. If they won't let you change anything in it, then it's not a contract.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah.
So right. I get what you're saying. And you're right. It starts right with the birth certificate. But the thing is you can't get into that in court because next thing you know, they'll have you down for a mental evaluation. They'll say, you're crazy. That's the game they play. But you see, if you act responsibly and you talk in a professional way and you use good terms, I've seen people where prosecutors have walked up to them and congratulated them and say, I've never heard anybody present a case like that. You know, and so you can get respect. Believe me, we had a guy in court. We helped a guy get out of family court that had a order of protection and all that. We got him out in 2 weeks, and which is unheard of, you know. And when he got done, when he was in the court, in the local court, because we took him out of the local court immediately, because there was some baloney that went on, you know, where they called the local police in. And they had ticketed him for numerous things. Once they come on the property, they find other things to ticket you. And so he had the judge, so the judge couldn't even answer him. And they kind of lost the decor of the courtroom because he's saying things that the judge can't answer. And so eventually they came to whatever agreement, and the judge let them walk out and whatever they resolved. And so the next person come up with their ticket, and he reads the charges, and he says, "How do you plead?" He goes, "I want what that other guy did." The whole courtroom lost it. So what happened is, whenever we had cases in court, they wouldn't let us go on court night. They made a special night so nobody would be there. I mean, and that in itself is a violation, because they're supposed to be doing these things in public. They're not supposed to be having you in secret courts on secret days. And back then, we weren't as educated as we are now. We put up with it. I mean, knowing what I know now, I would say, no way. You're going to have this on the normal. What are you calling me in on a non-court night? And then if I couldn't get them to change it, I would make sure I pulled 50 people in. You know what I mean? For witnesses. Because what they're doing is they're trying to make the court proceed in secret so they can do what they're, because they don't operate well in the light. And look, this is what the committees of safety should be doing. That's how you get light on this stuff. Like Nikki said, you know, work things out amongst each other. And if so, you know, and then you get to a point where you need a mediator, you know, let somebody mediate, because once you reach an agreement and you sign it on a piece of paper and it's notarized, that's as powerful as anything you could do. That's a contract. It's an agreement between two people. And there's usually 99 times out of 100 you can come to an agreement, I think. I think you can balance the scales. It's not so hard. You know, in those matters between two people that aren't criminal, let's say, right? And there should be no reason why two people can't reach an agreement. And then once you have a contract, you can hold their feet to the fire under equity laws. Absolutely, you know. So those are the things we need to think about doing in our communities. Anybody else have anything else?
I just want to mention something, as long as on the subject of taxes. I was listening to a conference call a little earlier by this guy by the name of Payman. I forget what his last – I can't pronounce his last name. It's an Iranian last name. But actually, the reason I mention it is because I had a problem, and this is probably a familiar situation with a lot of people, is that I had the IRS put a levy on my bank account, and it was a lot of money. It was an insurance settlement, and they tried to grab something like $90,000+, and this fellow helped me get that levy released. And he had a very interesting conference call in which he has had this offer for the last several years that he would pay $300,000 to anybody who could prove that they are liable to an income tax. So a law professor by the name of Jonathan Siegel took him up on that and sent him a letter saying how everybody is liable for the income tax. Well, anyway, Payman tore him a new one, point by point. And the website is Live Free Now, and it was very interesting because he went into the statutes and the codes and the statutes and the codes, the definitions, because they're different, and all these things like individuals and corporations and who's subject and who's not. So I just wanted to pass that on because I know this is a big problem, because what the IRS does is they levy your bank account. They do not go through the a lawful process, and then they make you fight to get the money back, to prove that they didn't have it, to have the right to grab that money. Now, luckily, mine was cash. Now, if you got a piece of real estate, it's going to be that much more harder because that's an immovable object. So I just wanted to mention that if anybody's interested.
Yeah, look, the tax, you know, they tell you it's voluntary, but try to volunteer not to pay it. The reason that people are liable for income tax, without getting into all their statutes and stuff, is because you contract with them, and you absolutely do, and you do it. It's fraud because they don't tell you that. But when you send in a W-2 or a 1099, what you're saying is, I am a taxpayer. And the tax code says that if you let one of those forms go in that say you're a taxpayer, and then you come back later and you try to say you're not, well, look, either you're lying or you committed fraud and perjury when you signed it. If you know that a bank is sending in 1099s on your interest stuff, you're supposed to – the IRS actually has forms where you're supposed to go in and correct that, and you have to say that's a false information report. The reason people get audited and the reason the IRS goes after people is because they base it on the information reports that they're getting. And so if you're getting money from an insurance company and they're making it under a 1099, that 1099 says, I owe the tax. So when the 16th Amendment was passed, you'll see there was Supreme Court rulings that said the 16th Amendment conferred no new power of taxation, and they were absolutely right. All of these laws that they use, even the land tax, which I was going to pipe in with Nikki, but I lost my train of thought there, is they have to be constitutional on their face. And so then people take – they get, oh, income tax is unconstitutional. Well, it would be. That's true. Look, even land tax is illegal on so many levels. But one of the ways that it's illegal, if you want to get into the statutes of it, the particulars of it, which is – I don't advise you argue those because they're very good at them and they twist them as they go along. But they're not supposed to have an ad valorem tax on land. If they could tax land, it would have to be per acre, flat. It doesn't matter if you had a castle or a hovel, $1 an acre. That's it. When they start looking at the value, ad valorem, they're entering in territory that they have no jurisdiction. Same thing with the income tax. If they wanted to have a set tax on income across the board, a percentage, that would make it better than this graduated, where the more you make, the more they take. That's absolutely outside of the law. So, you see, but what they do is, you contract in so they can do whatever they want. You know, you can sign certain rights away with a contract. You absolutely can. When you sign up and go in the military, you lose an awful lot of rights, don't you? They tell you where you be, where you have to be, and what you're going to do. And if you don't, they're going to throw you in the brig. And they can absolutely do that because you signed a contract with them, right? And so that's the same thing with the income tax. You're contracting in, and the same thing with the land taxes is the fact that, you know, we allow them to do it. You know, we enter into a contract with them because we don't protest it, and we don't, you know, look at, if they think that they own our land for some reason, that they got some kind of something on the deed, well, let them show that. They can't show that. I mean, what's all this title insurance we buy when we do the title deed? If there's a lien that says that this land has to pay taxes on it, you know, that the government owned it, and that you had to pay them the rest of the whole time that you really don't own it, that I want my insurance company to pay me because I paid them for title insurance that said the title's free and clear of all encumbrances, which includes the taxes, because in order to tax it, they got to somehow – see, that's the thing the IRS doesn't do. They have to prove – they have to have proof of claim and proof of fiduciary, how they gain fiduciary responsibility over you. And there's two forms that you need to ask for, and John has put them out there. It's a Form 50 and I think 1140, and that's what it shows. And when they tell you that they have a – when they give you a notice of lien – there's never a lien. The judge allows them to go ahead, but there's no lien. And they tell them that there's a lien on record in the federal court. There absolutely is not. Because in order to have a lien, there has to be an affidavit and there has to be a signature, and nobody will do that because they know that they're committing perjury, that they're lying. Nobody will sign those things. So they tell you it's a notice of lien. Well, where's the lien? Ask to see the lien. It's not there. It's a lie. And so what you do immediately is you sue all of them, every one of them. You know, we had a case here where they put the notice of lien and they locked the account down and blah, blah, blah. And immediately the lawsuit went out. It went out to the banks, the officers of the bank. It went out to the IRS agents. It went out to the county clerk who filed the notice of lien and the sheriff who delivered it. Sued everybody. And And by the time it was over, they dropped the they gave a release of lien and a letter of apology. Where do you get that? When do you ever see that? So, you know, you have to know what you're dealing with and how you're doing it. And the other thing is you know, if they get you in the tax court, you're in trouble. You know, they have different courts and they got jurisdictions that change. And so, you know, you want to be real careful when you go in there because you're doing battle with an evil force. And they'll change jurisdictions on you as you talk. And it's very easy for you to stick your foot in your mouth and not know it. You know, so it's at that level, when you're on the federal level fighting income tax, you're not playing checkers anymore. You're playing chess. So you want to be real careful. You want to know what you're doing. But you're right. You got to educate yourself on their terminology. And look at the definition of taxpayer. If you know what the definition is, guess what? It's not you. And the definition of real property is not what I own. It's a 2-page long definition. And it talks about dockage and wharfage and rentals and this and that and all this commercial activity that I don't have going on. And I make income off of my property. You're dang right I do. But I'm not a corporation. I'm not a fiction of the state. I'm not created by the state. That income is my income on my land. It's no different than me growing carrots and selling them on the corner. They have no right to stick their fingers in my income or tax me because of the privilege of doing it. Now, if I ask permission, And I become a creation of a fiction of the state, that's a different story. Now I'm contracting with them, right? But I'm telling you, the definition of real property over here is about 2 pages long, and as you're reading in the second to the last paragraph, they take a breath and they go, for a corporation for profit, and then they go on. Well, wait a minute. For a corporation for profit, is that me? Is that you? You know, but it's hidden, and it's done in such a way that you'll miss it if you don't. You got to read it 100 times before you finally realize what they're saying. I don't know how these guys come up with this language and who spent all this time doing this stuff, but let me tell you what, the evil spends an awful lot of time. Somebody's spending a lot of time to trap us. Just like the Patriot Act, how many hundred or thousand pages was that thing? And it was and it was right there the week of the attack. Boom! Somebody had that thing written up, 3,000 pages of all this gobbledygook, you know. So
Here's the other interesting thing about that situation is that what they sent the bank was what they call a notice of levy. So I asked the bank, well, where's the actual levy? Where is this filed? What does it look like? And they couldn't provide me with anything.
Because it's not there.
So they don't even apparently file these. I don't know if they do or not, but, you know, the bank doesn't provide you with that information.
Listen, that's why you immediately sue the bank, immediately. Because what they're doing is the bank has a certain fiduciary responsibility to you, and one of the fiduciary responsibilities is to not let anybody steal your money, and that's exactly what they're doing. When they take that notice of levy and they lock your account down, they better dang well know that there's a levy or a lien someplace. And if they're not asking, then guess what? They better start, you know?
Here's the other thing. People should take, and I haven't even done this myself, but it came to my attention recently. People need to look at their bank identity cards and read the fine print. Because from what I heard, and I don't know if it's true, but I'm going to check it out myself, is that basically, you know, that money that you keep there becomes the bank's money.
That is absolutely true, and it's a recent thing. So when you're putting your money in the bank, you're giving it to them to use, and they're considering it like it's a stock market. And if the bank loses it, that was the risk that you took,
right. Which
is ridiculous because they have FDIC insurance. So why would you have FDIC insurance if it's the bank's money? What are you insuring me against? What, a bad investment? I mean, they are insuring you against the bank going bankrupt, which would be bad investments, but what they've done is they've made you partners with the bank by putting that money in. look at, they're always doing the stretch of the imagination. They're very good word crafters, and they're very good at you know, making things into other things. You know, smoke and mirrors.
Hey, Gerard?
Yeah.
Gerard, this is Harley. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So, germane to that right there, I'm about to put in my motion for dismissal over unlawful trespass on my property the day that they kidnapped me. A lot of people know this story. I'm at a loss to know, like, how much or how little should I submit with that? Because I could go into a litany. You know, I have the affidavits are already installed about the event. But as far as this notice of levy, maybe, or, you know, I mean, I've even got information, and I'm thinking about putting my Supreme Court case documents in and saying, here's why I was still on the property, because there was a failure to answer in the Supreme Court, and then I had, at the same time, this Supreme Court case pending.
Well, are you telling me the Supreme Court defaulted? They didn't answer.
You moved. They ended up dismissing my Supreme Court challenge to the County Superior Court.
So you're talking about the state Supreme Court. You're not talking about a federal Supreme Court, right?
No, I'm not there yet, and I want to powwow with you about filing federal cases and talk to you about the information that was actually handed directly to me about how to file federal cases in Vermont. And it's more clear information than I've got trolling the web or asking any of you folks on these calls or anything. It's kind of funny. I'm getting the idea that there's a skeleton pretty well intact in Vermont for constitutional law. Like, I don't know, we're very small.
You're gonna like the federal court more than you like the state. The state courts are horrible. They don't care.
I don't like any of it, but
I'm just
telling you,
you're gonna have an easier time in federal court. Because
they really want to get rid of me.
Of course. You're gonna have to make it so that the judge is afraid that his neck is going to be on the line when you go into the federal court. And what he'll do is he'll send notes down to the state court and say, get this case out of my court. So when you write I don't want to talk about this now, but I'll talk about it later to you, that there's a certain tone that you have to use without threatening the judge, but he knows that you know that he knows, and you're not going away. And that's what will win you.
Yeah, okay, well, we'll get to all that. I want to talk to you directly about that, but this is really urgent because it's like Tuesday. And all I want to glean here from you, the brain trust online right here, is how much or how little, because I know I can get, these guys want me to go away and not go through my jury pick process and all that stuff over these petty charges that won't stick anyway, and I'm only using them as a lever anyway, but I want to just install in my next submission, right, my motion for dismissal, all the right parts that will work for me in federal court. You got me?
Look, whenever you're doing a case in a state Supreme Court, you're always doing a federal case. When you're making your case, you're always making it for the federal court.
Exactly. So I need particulars.
Whatever you document in the state court is what you can bring. If you don't make the claim, you can't bring it up. But don't forget, you can't get into particulars of the case in the federal court because they're only looking at fundamental right violations. They don't need to know.
I know the principle.
Right.
What I want to know is specifically, and this is not the state court again, this is just the county court over unlawful trespass and resisting arrest, which are just like, they're very trivial. They get them more in trouble than they get me. They're going to have egg all over their face if I drag this through a whole jury trial thing. I can get it dismissed. That's not a problem. They're not belligerent to me. They want me to go away. My point with you guys is very specific here. should I put the whole document, even though it's a matter of record and they know it came through there, but should I just put it, I have a case number, I can put anything onto this I want, and I'm trying to get my 91 acres of land back in restitution for the, everything they destroyed and pain and suffering. So, you know, I have an agenda here. Beyond
well,
just hearing my...
Harley, that's a loaded question, and it's hard to answer, and I'm going to tell you why. Because sometimes more is less is more. But other
right.
times, there's also cases I've seen where they put everything but the kitchen sink in, and the judge was forced to look at everything, and because there was one thing that they couldn't answer, he had mm-hmm. to answer it, and it was a common law thing. Now, are you going to get a judge as that conscientious? I mean, there was a case of a guy, a sovereign citizen, out west when they were fighting these guys, and he put all this stuff in, and there was one point that he made that they hadn't answered, and I don't know if it voted to a jurisdiction or what. And he put all this stuff in, and if it wasn't in there, the judge would not have had to consider it. You see, mm-hmm. whatever you don't put in, if you don't put it in the case to begin with, you can't bring it up later. So I don't know what your case looks like. I mean, you don't want to overwhelm them either, because, you know, if you got some really good points that'll win you, and you don't need, you know, and I mean, you're looking, the local stuff, like you said, you can get it dismissed. They're not going to go there. But you're trying to build the case for the federal case, right?
One of my feral frustrations with our system so far is after 8 years of beating on this, and only a small amount of it is like traffic and, you know, kids stealing stuff, a lot of it is really this confiscation rig, right? I want us to get more sophisticated so when I've been through this, somebody comes to me, I can tell them the answer to this question, because it seems like it should be almost universal amongst us. If we hold our ground and then we get in trouble, you know, by them for going up against the bank in a civil matter and they turn it into a criminal matter, we should by now be sophisticated enough to have a document that you could basically just put your own big information into, and they've got to recognize that they're totally out of jurisdiction, that they meddled in something that wasn't even theirs, that they're in chancery court, may have no chance against you, and then immediately you're on your golden carpet to the federal court. And the real game, like you guys always tell us, is we got to get into federal court. We just get in federal court. I know for a fact that I can get in federal court. I'm looking at how cut and dried it is for Vermont, not trying to be overconfident. I'm just saying I've listened to the horror stories and the bugaboos across the country, and I think I can do this thing, but I'm asking you guys for specifics on this call. What should I put in? I've got this whole big old Supreme Court case. I think I should put it in there and then just cite from it. Like, I asked for this, then I asked for this, and no answer, and then you told me this, right? Does that sound like a good logical progression?
I think if you put that stuff in there, you can always go back. You can pare it down later. If you don't put it in the beginning, you can't go back and try to do it. So what you want to make sure is that you cover everything that you can, and then you take the most damning points, and those are the ones that you carry forward. The other thing is you also want to put stuff in there that the judge is liable for, that's going to put his skin on the line if he doesn't rule properly. You know what
I
mean?
So I need to put a finer point on what that stuff is.
Right. In other words, when they're really clearly, blatantly violating you, and he's not stepping up when they're in clear violation of a statute or a law, and he didn't step up, you have to do it in undertones, but he has to realize that he's going to become part of this case if he doesn't rule properly. And you got to do
but
that.
But do you get my point? Do you get
oh, yeah,
my point?
I do. Yep.
That by now, that's almost boilerplate for us. Like, we should be able to have that.
Well,
and
let me just say one thing.
We should be able to say that it's this set of situations that's 99% of the time that's happening. We know it. And you know, they get their criminal gang. Listen, they got the state police to browbeat the sheriff until he allowed it to happen. Like, he just couldn't put it off anymore. I could tell by every move he made and the emails between the bank telling them basically when they're going to arrest me. And that's like, that's totally RICO, collusion, conspiracy, whatever
Absolutely.
You want to call it. I just don't know how far to go it with it in this venue, because I don't want to alarm them so much that they do something really extrajudicial, right, and lock me up. But I want to go far enough so that I have the leverage in federal court.
All and I can I'll tell you is be careful, because they have methods of sucking you in. Like if the judge makes an order and you don't follow it, I've seen this in banking stuff. He may say, well, you got to show up over here or here and show your financial stuff, and you don't feel that you should, and you don't answer it properly, and you just don't show up. The next thing he does is he has you arrested for contempt of court. They Thanks like to more. Make orders that they know that you can't follow or that you won't follow, and then that way they come and arrest you. Now they got you in jail. You're under duress. How do you work your case out? They know this stuff. They're evil. So just be careful. I'll talk to you off of this. I don't want. We're going on a long time.
Yeah. Okay. Let's. I stand down now. I yield.
Yeah. So. It's 10:17. I'm going to end it unless somebody. Yes. Who's that?
Hello. Am I unmuted? This is Dave in St. Louis.
Yes,
Dave. Is this Gerard?
Yes.
Is this Gerard?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I come by that email that was sent by this gal she goes by the name of a Lotus Justice, and it has to do with the 13th Amendment. Are you the one that initially picked up on that?
I read that. I don't remember where I got it from. It was floating around, and
I've not only got it, but I've contacted her and had made arrangements with her to see if I couldn't get a big organization to put it on, you know, on the media. So in my conversation with her, I got her to allow me to get in touch with Alex Jones of InfoWars. And I also thought that it would be helpful to Donald Trump to help him get elected. My problem is I can't get in touch with either one of them.
You think we haven't tried?
No. What I'm asking, I'm thinking about, since I can't get this thing published there, what about us using it? Are you familiar with the original 13th Amendment?
Yep, I am. And I understand. And John actually has the congressional record that proves that it was.
I'm sorry, I can't hardly hear you.
Really? I don't know why. Let me see.
Well, I've got my volume up all the way.
I don't know. I have to check my mic here. But anyway, I believe John has that information also, that she claims to have the congressional record where they discussed, and it proves that it was, you know, the original 13th Amendment, how it was ratified, what it said. I haven't looked into all that. John has. Now, this woman, Lotus Justice, I don't know what her real name is. She's pretty good,
either.
Except for she has one problem. She has one problem with her strategy. She kind of enters into their fiction too much. She gives them too much credibility. You know, when she goes back to the Judiciary Act and says, well, in the beginning, it has this thing in there that says that you can call on your court, let's say, that we have the right to a common law court, which we know we have that. And she goes through each of their get-out-of-jail-free cards. Well, in the process of doing that, if you just, you're giving them credibility with what they did. Look at that whole thing. It was unconstitutional on its face. So why are we going to go in and argue the particulars of what they claim we can do and we can't do? Because by arguing those particulars, you end up in their court. I mean, she's done a lot of good work. Look at, she went into Ohio, I think it was, when they said you couldn't demur. They outlawed demur, and she got it overturned in the Ohio Supreme Court. That's pretty impressive, right? So she has done some things, and she's been, but, you know, what I want to say, I think she's very good. I think that she has some good research in that, but the problem is she's giving them too much credibility. Like Thornton says, do you want to fight or do you want to win? So if you go in and you start arguing about little terms, I mean, I know guys, that study the statutes, and they study them, and they study them. Then they go in and they prove that they didn't follow their own statutes, and they use these certain statutes against them, and other statutes that they didn't follow, and they win their cases. And then what happens is you'll never go back and win it again, because those statutes are theirs, and they change them. The minute they get into a horn dilemma with them, they never get caught again. Who was that guy, Beecraft or whatever it was, that one case against the taxes by using their statutes and getting them to answer things? He never won another case with them, and I'll tell you why. Because he can never use that strategy again, because they're wise to it now, because he used their statutes. And when you're arguing in their venue under their law, it's like you're standing on a liquid, you know, you're surfing.
Well, I was thinking more in terms of the fact that the original 13th Amendment, as I understood it, was what put all of these foreigners in our country to begin with. And the 13th Amendment was trying to get rid of them. I mean, that's what our forefathers came up with. And they replaced that 13th Amendment by two other 13th Amendments. But the one that she's talking about having ratified is the one that talks about de-citizizing people that were foreigners. And this whole thing is set up by foreigners, is it not? Isn't that why we got what we got?
When you say foreigners, I was always...
I'm talking about the British people, the people from Britain.
They have an oath to the crown. It's a title of nobility. You're not supposed to have lawyers running the government.
Right.
They got no business because you can't serve two masters.
Wouldn't this, the proof of this being ratified, make them quit doing what they're doing?
Look at this has been run through before. This is not the first time this has come out, and they're not going to just roll over because you come in there and say, look, I got the original paper. They don't care. Obama's proof of that. You know, he says, if the Congress won't do it, I'll do it myself. So what's the answer to that? So you're going to go in there with this original 13th Amendment and plop it down, and what's going to happen? They're going to, you know, is it going to make an ether come over the room and these guys are going to drop dead? Absolutely not. The only way that will have any effect on anything is if everybody knows about it and everybody screams about it.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get to happen. Everybody knows about it. That's why I'm trying to get a media that'll talk about it to do it.
It is out there. It is in the media. She's not the only one. I've heard about this for 10 years now. This has been out there. This isn't a new discovery. People have been screaming about it since it happened. So what are we going to do different? I understand we can list it. We can show it. We can talk about it. This, you know, look at the best
thing.
Well,
what about the people rising up and suggesting they want this law that was ratified back in 18... I don't think it was either 09 or 12, I don't know which, remember which, that's on the books as being a law of the Constitution, or a constitutional law.
Well, the trouble is they replaced it twice with two other 13th Amendments, which were probably not ratified properly. I don't know what the story is, how they did that. But, you know, time and again, we see that the legislators will make laws that violate the Constitution, and which means they're no law at all, because they run afoul of the Constitution. So therefore, they don't confer any authority on anybody, and you can disobey them with impunity. That's what Marbury versus Madison says. The trouble is there's nothing so frightful as ignorance in action. Just like Harley was saying, I want to put this in, but I don't want them to do something extrajudicial to punish me, and they will. And if you're not in there, like what a Gandhi effect of people, that's exactly what they'll do. They'll silence you any way they can, even if it's illegal or unlawful, or if they got to poison your well or whatever else these people do. I mean, look at we got the worst criminal. She must have to file her horns down every day running for president, right?
I understand
she's
that.
Up there,
she shouldn't be in there at all.
She shouldn't be in there at all. So guess what? How come she's there? How come that 13th Amendment isn't being behaved? Everybody knows she shouldn't be in there.
Well, I didn't say they were going by it. I said it was been ratified in its law. The fact
right.
that they're not
anyway,
doing it, there's a whole bunch of things they're not doing.
That's right. And so this is all going to come out now. This is part of the plan of bringing this stuff in with a number into the courts and making them answer. That's exactly what has to happen. It has to come. I don't know if you read our original mandamus, but guess what? That's in there. And that's a court.
It is?
Whether you know or not. Absolutely. We know. I told you. We've known about this. And the same thing with the 17th Amendment.
The people have already let them know that we're aware that this is a ratified.
I believe. Go back and look at the paperwork we filed. It's one of the things.
Which one could I find it in, Garrett?
I think it was the first one. I think it was the Corwanto. I think it's in there. It's mentioned in there that they have the wrong 13th Amendment. Yes, I believe it was the Corwanto. Now, Corwanto, if you look into a Corwanto and understand what a Corwanto is, it is a summons. You see, they don't like to act because they say, oh, well, we didn't get a summons and you didn't get a number and all this other baloney. But a Corwanto is exactly that. It's the beginning of a case, and they do have to answer it. And that's what we're planning on doing. You know what I mean? This is all coming under. That's why that. When we're filing this case, we're including everything. We included CPS. We included the land grabs. We included everything they're doing. We the income tax. Everything's in there. Go read it. You know, there's a line or a paragraph.
Let me ask you two other things, because I got in here late. Did you say that Bundy's won their trial?
The everybody in Oregon. Or Portland there with the Ballier Refuge, the seven guys that were on trial were found not guilty on all charges.
Well, that's great news, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I think now, the way I understand it, is the other ones that were going to come up after them cannot be brought in, because if those seven weren't guilty, then certainly the other 40 were not. And then somebody said, well, not only that, they found out that 35 of them were informants or something like that, you know. So they have the case.
Wasn't NLA part of that?
We filed papers on that, but of course they because we didn't take a number, they've got them hidden. They got them in a file. In a miscellaneous file that they don't see, but that's all coming out.
We're not going to get any credit for handling that for them.
No,
I mean that it turned out to be a common law grand jury, didn't it?
No. This is a regular jury that they picked, that they had control over, that they tried to control and they tried to subvert, and they found them not guilty anyway. That's how bad the federal government mishandled the trial so that even their puppet juries were so sick they wanted to puke before they made their decision. They made the decision, and it was a jury that they picked, and they had some trouble. Juror number 11 turned out was a BLM employee, and then he was tainted, and he said some stuff, and they actually forced the judge to kick him off yesterday and bring an alternate in. This is a big precedent right here. This is a winning of the battle, one battle in the war, but it's the beginning, you know.
We're going to blow our horn about it, right?
You're damn straight we are. And look at this is like when you finally get a touchdown in football and the momentum starts to sway. We got to keep the momentum up because this was a touchdown.
That's
now we
got to
go
That's
back.
Great.
We got to go get a first down now. You know, we got to go get the three-pointer and then go back. You know what I mean?
Okay. Let me ask you one more question. I ordered and got one of those radios that you have for sale, and I asked to have it programmed because I don't know my what you call it from my left elbow this radio. I didn't get anything in here that tells me that it's been programmed, and I have no idea how the hell to work one of these. Would I be better to join them on a Wednesday night call to try to find out? Are they capable of telling me on that?
Look, you get a hold of Terry in Colorado. She's our ham radio person, and those
okay.
channels are programmed. Those five channels should be, if you gave them your zip code and all that stuff, are
well,
programmed.
I did. When I ordered it, I told them I wanted it programmed, and I paid for it, so... but there's nothing in this box or in the package
David,
suggesting it was programmed.
David, there's
well,
there
won't
a
be.
Sheet of paper, an 8x12 piece of paper in there with a listing of all of the channels that were programmed on there. There should have been the five regular MUX or MERV channels, and then there should have been 10 to 15 other channels. And I see by the record here that you did pay for the programming. But there should have been.
So does that mean it was programmed?
It should have been, yeah. You should have gotten, I know I did, a 8x11 piece of paper, and it tells each channel it's on there and where it goes.
So maybe they forgot to put the paper in his box. We have to figure it out.
That's
and
possible.
It's easy to figure out because all you have to do is go to one of those local stations, and you should hear your local fire calls and ambulance calls, you know what I mean? You'll know immediately. So, yeah, we'll have to get a hold of him and find out, you know, where your paper is. And, yeah, if you
well,
go
I
on.
Well, I do have something in here, but it don't make much sense to me. Hold on just 1 minute.
That's probably it.
Yeah.
The local name, the frequency.
Yep. Right.
There are 16 of them. Is that the one I'm
there
looking for?
That's the one. That's the channels that are programmed, pre-programmed for
okay.
you.
Okay. So
you
that, if I use that in... contact Terry on Wednesday. Do I have to wait till Wednesday to contact her?
No, you can call her anytime. But what you need to do is get the book out so you learn how to turn it on and to go to a channel and then just call up those channels that are on your list. You can go through one by one and check them out.
Okay. Do you got without me going on the web, do you got a phone number for Terry?
Yeah, hold on a sec. I bet I can find one.
Somebody else was trying to get in there in the meantime while he's looking for that. Who was trying to talk?
Perhaps it was I. Can you hear me okay?
I'm fine.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Earlier you were talking about the mole hearer refuge thing with the people being acquitted, you know? And
uh-huh.
you said that it was like making a first down and so forth. You know what
yeah.
would be a real touchdown? Would be to have the assassins of Lavoie Finicum indicted and convicted. Of the
well, I believe that that's going to happen regardless. It was going to happen whether they were guilty, whether they found them guilty or not. The reason the judge didn't want them talking about that is because she knows how bad it was. They didn't want to bring that up at all because that was an ambush. And they're going to, look at, people are going to go to jail on that one. And we have evidence. Look at that. The analysis that was done on that thing, it was unbelievable. That analysis, the video analysis that fella did for the Finicums.
Yeah.
And he gave it to us also. That was a great, great analysis. And that, he didn't even release everything that he has. That what he released is a good part of it, but it's not all of it. You know, he held some back. And
mm-hmm.
it's really disgusting the way that they set that thing up in order to make sure that they ran into that roadblock and that they would not be able to stop. How they stopped them a mile before the roadblock and then shot at them so they would run, which would guarantee that they were entering into a roadblock a mile down at
mm-hmm.
a high speed on a blind turn. And then every time they shot at them, he was able to show with the film and the timing, and thank God Shauna had her phone running, because he was able to sync the video and the gunshots and the speed of the truck, and he could actually see that every time he shot, Lavoie's foot came up off the brake, because the natural instinct when you're shooting at a truck is for your to pull in like you're flinching, expecting a bullet, and each time he did that, the truck took off a little faster. So they knew their thing was to incite them to shoot back, and to incite them to run. And that way that when they got in, crashed into the car, they were hoping that he crashed into the cars, that they could kill everybody. Nobody was supposed to come out of that truck. That was an ambush, and it was a murder, and there's no doubt about it, and they're not going to get away with it. Anyway, I don't want to get on. So that's coming. Lots of stuff coming now, and all that stuff discredits the federal government.
All right. Thank you.
Dave, do you have a pen? And a number is 303-438-9777.
Okay, 303-438-9777.
Right, you got it.
Right. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Sure. God bless everybody. Sorry I took so long.
That's all right. Thank you.
No problem.
See you Monday.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? It's 10:37. I think we'll close because we try to keep these an hour. We're already an hour and a half. I don't think we can.
But hey, Gerard.
Anyway,
What's a good time maybe tomorrow to talk on the phone or Skype?
That's a good question. I'm working tomorrow. I could do it in between things, but I'm going to have to let me call you and... You know, I'm probably, if I had to guess, and because tomorrow's a Friday, that's my crazier day, but I'm going to say probably around noontime for me.
Okay.
Get a lull. Okay?
That'd be great. So, and we can bring...
Try to get me on Skype, or I'll try, if I don't hear from you, I'll try to sit down and call you. All right?
Oh, okay, I'll try to give you a poke around then.
Yep, sounds good.
Very good, folks.
Okay, thank you, everybody. Thanks for coming. Thanks for everybody that contributed, and I hope everybody learned a little something from this. Get doing those committees of safety. I feel like a broken record, but I can't help it because it's that important. It's so important that our forefathers did it. So, I mean, that's a good endorsement for me. It's good enough. So you guys should follow suit and do it. And start working. And look, at Veronica's got a lot of good stuff there too. I mean, as far as suggestions on how to get this going on different levels depending on where you want to start and where you want to go. It's so versatile. It's a no-brainer. You just need to do it.
Maybe the problem was that they had forefathers, but we only have one.
Yeah. Well, today it takes forefathers to straighten everybody out. I could use some help here.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm going to close now. Everybody, have a good night. Thank you. Thank you.
Great call, Gerard. Thanks.
Thank you. Good night.